I guess I'm just starting. Great. All right, where did my clicker go? Great. I mean, I can always just hit the button. I'm right here, but you know. All right, great. A few things about Daniel. Anybody? Review. We had two classes. God rules the nations. Do not fear. Okay. God is in control. And how to stay righteous and faithful to God despite all kinds of pressure from the world. Right? So, God rules the nations. There's our themes. By the way, I didn't have copies last time, but I do have copies of the book on Daniel. If you want one, that'd be great. All right? And remember, the audience is going to be the Jews suffering extreme persecution. We're going to get to that next Wednesday when we get to Daniel chapter 8. We're going to see that Daniel 8, Daniel 10, and 11 are all about that. All right? And then, anyway, we've been doing the first part of the book, which is the practical stories where Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are staying faithful to God despite every kind of pressure. Daniel 1 was about being righteous on the job. Daniel 3 was about being righteous despite pressure to compromise your religious convictions. Daniel chapter 4 was about the fact that God will humble us if we're prideful. And Daniel 5 was about the writing on the wall, right? All right, so we're in Daniel chapter 6. And we read a few verses there, but let's read some more. All right, now the date is roughly 537, 536 BC. Babylon has been overthrown. Cyrus the Persian is kind of in control. And Darius the Mede is the king of the Babylonian province where Daniel is ruling as an administrator. All right, now we already saw how Darius set up four kind of administrators over his huge territory. One of them was very faithful, very righteous, wasn't corrupt, as Daniel. So he's going to make him the head of all these guys, right? And there's this great thing where it says, at this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for a charge against Daniel in the conduct of government affairs, but they were not able to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. And so hopefully we would be like Daniel. The only way our coworkers could get us is because we're so godly. Hopefully that's the only thing they could count against you. I for myself, I've gotten in trouble at work. One of my students tried to sue me for being too Christian. He said, "Why, you know, how can a professor have Christian stuff on his website at this school?" And he went to my dean and he insisted that the school should sue me. It's like, you know, you can put atheist stuff up there. Nobody says anything. You can put Islam and all kinds of stuff. But if you put something, a Christian up there, I guess people are going to be intimidated by that. Anyway, my dean laughed at it. It was not a big deal. But anyway, so these guys figure the only way they're going to get Daniel is by using his religion against them. So let's read starting in verse 6. So these administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, "May King Darius live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, and advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days except to you, your majesty, should be thrown into the lion's den. Now, your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so it cannot be altered in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. So basically, what are they appealing to in Darius? His pride. "Sir Darius, you're amazing. Oh, yeah, you're amazing. You know what we should do? We should make sure that people only pray to you for the next 30 days. Darius is like, "Yes, that's a great idea." Now, what does it say about pride? Pride goes before what?
Fall. Right,
right, exactly. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to set up Daniel for a fall. It doesn't work that way, as if you know the story. So anyway, now when Daniel, so King Darius put the decree in writing. Now, Daniel, of course, was well known for being a man of prayer. Now, I want to get a show of hands. How many of you would have prayed, even though to God, even though it was a decree to pray to, you know, whatever, some pagan idol? How many would you have prayed to God anyway? Okay, good. I thought so. How many of you would have opened your window and prayed? I don't think I would have. Why? I mean, are you more close to God if you open your window than if you don't? I mean, you know, I don't mean... I'm glad you would have. Honestly, I'm glad you would have, because Daniel did, right? It's pretty cool. So, I mean, I'm proud of you, that those of you who said yes. But I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have. I think, why would I want to get thrown into lion's den? All right, so the majority of us would not have done that. But we know that Daniel did. Let's read about that. Now, when Daniel learned the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and he prayed, giving thanks to his God just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about this royal decree. Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, whoever prays to any god or human being except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the lion's den? King answered, the decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. So, why did Daniel do this?
Faithful.
All right, Kelly would have. So why would you have done it anyway? Why would you have opened your window? Yeah, but since you could get thrown in prison, why would you open your window? I mean,
another thing is,
you could keep praying, but I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm just. Yeah.
God rescued him before.
Right. So he just believed that there's no point in not open. In fact, who knows? Maybe pretty cool. Maybe I'll get killed and thrown to the lions for being a righteous man. What better way is there to go? Really, seriously. Now, you know, as a parent of little kids, there's no way I could have said that. You know what I'm saying? But at 63, I mean, you know, if I get taken out that way, you know, that's not so bad. I'm pretty sure the lions would kill you just in a few seconds. You probably wouldn't feel a thing. All right. The bottom line is, by the way, Daniel was probably around 85 or so, you know. So, hey, he's probably going to get Alzheimer's or something like that. By the way, people always say Alzheimer's. No, it's not Alzheimer's. It's Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's. Old timers. It's not old. It's Alzheimer's. That's a pet peeve of mine, so I get it out there publicly. All I know is I am very encouraged that Daniel said, hey, they can do whatever they want to me. The bottom line was, when he was being persecuted, he saw that as an opportunity. That's awesome. And to me, when my student threatened to get me sued, I thought, that is so cool. I mean, that is so cool. I think I shared the story of not getting tenure because I shared my faith on the job, right? And to me, that was so cool. Now, I don't know if Jan felt that way at the time, but I thought it was cool. You know, because when you don't get tenure, basically it means you get fired. So they put me on probation for 1 year. And like I said, the president got fired and I got tenure. All right, great.
So he found an opportunity to trust God?
Yes, perfect. What she's saying is we should view these things not as a drag, not as punishment, not as God not being in control, but as an opportunity to give glory to God.
Amen.
Okay? So can you have that attitude? Now, that doesn't mean you behave obnoxiously. That doesn't mean you're constantly sharing your faith with everybody at work and not doing your job, right? Could Daniel ever have been accused of not doing his job? No, he could not, all right? Good. So anyway, let's read on. The decree stands. Now, apparently, what it was is in Persia, there's kind of like a constitutional kingdom in that apparently there were limits on the power of the king. And one of the limits was, if you write a decree, the king, he could not arbitrarily say, oh, never mind. The king did not have that power. So apparently, even the king did not have the power to repeal his own law. So he was trapped. And these guys, these satraps and administrators, knew it. So then they said to the king, Daniel is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to your majesty or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed, determined to rescue Daniel, and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, hey, dude, you said so. You got to take this guy and throw him into the lion's den. So the king gave the order, verse 16. They brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you. A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles, blah, blah, blah. All right. I assume everybody here knows how the story ends, right? Is there anybody here who does not know how the story ends? All right, yes. There is somebody. That's okay. Let's read how the story ends. It's a great story. Anyway, basically, the king did not sleep the entire night. He had no entertainment and basically no fancy food. And apparently, King Darius had big entertainment every night and lots of fancy food. The bottom line is, he loved Daniel. And he was trapped. I'm sure he was really not happy with these other administrators, but he was trapped. Verse 19, at the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice. Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve, continually been able to rescue from the lions? And apparently, he believed that Jehovah could rescue Daniel. Apparently, he believed that. Daniel answered, may the king live forever. My God sent his angel. He shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I have been found innocent in his sight. Now, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty. The king was overjoyed. He gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found in him because he had trusted in his God. Must have been a kind of a tense night, I imagine Daniel on one side of the lion's den, the lions on the other side kind of licking, the lions lick their paws and doing that kind of stuff and kind of look at him and kind of, how cats do that, kind of. And Daniel's like, The whole night, God came through for Daniel. Anyway, at the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel, well, I don't know if they falsely accused him. I mean, sort of. I mean, they accused him of praying. Basically, the people who tried to trap him to be killed were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. Ouch. Ouch. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Not so good. And then Darius is praising God. That's pretty cool. Daniel chapter 6. Okay, great. Now, visions of the future. Now, remember, the practical stories are basically how we should behave when the world is trying to get us to compromise our convictions, all right? And then the visions of the future, remember the connection is, because of these visions of the future, because of these amazingly specific prophecies that are fulfilled, it proves beyond a doubt that God's in control. And if God can take in nations and take them out, if he can predict events hundreds of years beforehand, I think he can handle your situation. I remember one time, a few years ago, this is back when I was in graduate school, and we were trying to get rooms in the dorm so we could have a Bible study the next semester. And you had to get in line really, really early, all right? And so I did that. I got in line like 5 in the morning. But the two sisters, they showed up a couple hours later. I said, what's wrong? What happened? They said, well, we were praying. And I said, instead of praying, you should have been getting in the line. That's what I said. Anyway, by the time they got to the front of the line, all the rooms in that dorm had been gone. They were all, in fact, they'd been gone for over an hour. And the sisters get to the front of the line, and they said, we're trying to get a room in this dorm. And she says, there's none left. And she said, she looked at her, I guess one of the application forms had fallen on the ground. And there was one, it turned out there was one room left.
Oh,
all right, I'm like, amen. Amen. God's in control. All right? So I was humbled in that situation. All right, so now we're going to go to Daniel chapter 2. That's a true story, by the way. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. So this, the year is 604, 605 BC. So Daniel is around 16, 17, 18 years old. So we're going way back. This is almost 7 years before the events of Daniel chapter 6. He had dreams and his mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, I've had a dream that troubles me and I want to know what it means. Then the astrologers answered the king, may the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream and we will interpret it. So apparently, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and it's like he knew it was from the gods. He wakes up and says, oh my gods. Oh my gods. Had quite a dream. So anyway, he calls in the astrologers and he says to interpret. They say, great, just tell us the dream and we'll interpret it for you. And see, he knows they're a bunch of fakes. Right? It's like, you know, they have all these fake miracles. At certain churches, they have, you know, somebody, they kind of walk on the stage kind of like this, and then they walk up the stage kind of like that, you know. And, you know, they have all these fake supposed healings. All right? But in this case, Nebuchadnezzar says, no, none of this fake stuff. This is from the gods, and you need to tell me the dream and then interpret it. Otherwise, how do I believe your interpretation? Because he knows they're a bunch of fakes. So then he says, fine, I'll kill you all. That's all right. Then the king replied to the astrologers, this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into a pile of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards, great honor. So tell the dream and interpret it for me. Once more they reply, oh, let the king tell his servants the dream and we'll interpret it. And then the king says, I am certain you're trying to gain time. So anyway, it turns out that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were in this group of advisors. Now, they're obviously not astrologers or magicians, but they're in these group of people advising them. So they're going to be killed. Anyway, verse 10, the astrologers answer the king, there's no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great or mighty, has ever asked such a thing. You want us to work an actual miracle? You know, like taking a hand that's been shriveled for 27 years and making it well? You know what? You want us to speak in an actual language that we never heard, that somebody else here knows? You know, you want us to do an actual miracle? Oh, that you're asking too much. All right, I don't know if you see I'm applying it here, but anyway. So anyway, they said, there's no way. So the king is furious. He decides to kill them. All right, so anyway, down in verse 17. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heavens concerning this mystery so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised God. Anyway, verse 24. Then Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to execute the wise men of Babylon, and said to him, do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king, and I will interpret his dream. All right, verse 26. The king asked Daniel, are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it? Now notice his answer. He says, no wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he asked him, but there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in the days to come. All right, in other words, he gives glory to God.
Yep.
He says, here's what you saw. You saw a massive statue. You saw a massive statue, head of gold, chest and arms of silver, belly and thigh of bronze, and legs of iron. All right? That's what you saw. All right? Verse 31. Your Majesty looked and saw a large statue, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in appearance. The head of the statue was made of pure gold, chest and arms of silver, belly and thigh bronze, legs of iron, his feet partly iron and partly baked clay. While you were watching, a rock was cut out, but not by human hands. It struck that statue on its feet of iron and clay and smashed them. The iron and clay, the bronze, the silver, the gold were all broken to pieces and became like chaff on a threshold floor in the summer. The wind swept them away without leaving a trace, but the rock that struck the statue became a huge mountain and filled all earth. So now Nebuchadnezzar says, "Oh my Jehovah!" All right, because he understood the dream. And then Daniel interprets the dream. All right, verse 37. Your Majesty, you are the King of the kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. He's kind of buttering him up. You're awesome. You're the head of gold. But he's got some bad news, which is your kingdom is not going to last forever. In your hands is placed all the mankind. All right, good, good. Verse 39. After you, another kingdom will rise inferior to yours. Now, wait a minute. Here's the Babylonian kingdom. All right. Here's the Persian kingdom. Let me see. Which is inferior? Babylonian kingdom, Persian kingdom. Well, I would say this. The city of Babylon was greater than any city in Persia. He's kind of trying to lessen the blow of the fact that his kingdom is going to be taken from him. Next, a third kingdom, one of bronze, will rule over the whole earth. Finally, there will be a fourth kingdom strong as iron. Now, what would be the strongest empire of the entire ancient world? Rome. So, here we go. The head of gold is Babylon. The chest of silver is the Persian-Mede kingdom. The belly of bronze is Greece. The legs of iron is Rome. Okay? So, there's the idea. There's the Greek kingdom and there's the Roman kingdom. Now, he says a few more things about it here. He says, after you another... I'm sorry. Now I'm in verse 40. Finally, there will be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, for iron breaks and smashes everything. And as iron breaks things to pieces, so it will crush and break all the others. Just as you saw the feet and toes were partly baked clay and partly of iron, so this will be a divided kingdom. Now, was Rome a divided kingdom? Yes. When did it divide? The answer is 390 years after Christ, which would be roughly about 950 years after Daniel gave this prophecy. Now, that's when Theodosian officially divided Rome into Eastern Rome and Western Rome. So according to Daniel, there's going to be four empires. The strongest of all will be the fourth, but it will be a divided kingdom. That's pretty good. All right, it says, as the toes were partly iron and partly clay, so this kingdom will be partly strong and partly brittle. Now, is that the case? It turns out absolutely, because about 60 years later, Western Rome fell to the Goths and was completely destroyed and never reestablished. But Eastern Rome, Byzantium, lasted until 1453 AD for over 1,000 years. So what Daniel just did was he just gave the history of the Near East for the next 2,000 years. That's pretty impressive. Now remember, those who say Daniel is not able to predict the future say that that Daniel was written around 160 B.C.
Or 1454.
So how do they explain the fact that he got the Roman Empire, which became a divided empire almost 400 years after Christ, and half was weak and half was strong? All right, good. In the time of those kings, which kings? In the time of the Roman kings. The God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will be left to any other people. It will crush all those kingdoms, bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever. This is the meaning of the vision of the rock cut out of the mountain, but not by human hands, a rock that broke the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold to pieces. Now, can you think of another empire that started during the Roman Empire that's still around. Another kingdom. Yes. And you all are citizens of that kingdom. All right. So according to Daniel, the kingdom of God, or at least an aspect of it that we call the church, would be established during the time of Rome. Now that's pretty impressive. But that's nowhere near as impressive as Daniel chapter 7. So let's get to Daniel chapter 7. And that's as far as we're going to get tonight. And we'll do 8 through 12 next Wednesday. All right. So I hope you got it. Daniel just gave, in a sketch picture, the outline of the history of the Mediterranean and Near Eastern world for the next 2,000 years. That's pretty good. Like I said, the book of Daniel is in a genre for which there is exactly one book ever written. And that is History of the Future. Good. Now, Daniel has a dream of four beasts. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, the year is 551 B.C. All right, so it's around 53 years or so after the vision of the statue. Daniel's still at it. He's still faithful. At this point, he's around 70 years old or so. Got it? Daniel had a dream and visions passed through his mind. He was lying in bed. He wrote down the substance of his dream. Daniel said, "In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me were the four winds of heaven, churning up the great seas." By the way, this is called apocalyptic language. So apocalyptic language, when you see that, everything is symbolic, and it's kind of like a comic book. You know, very dramatic, and there's meanings to these things, all right? I don't have time to get into all that. The great sea represents the multitudes of people. Anyway, four great beasts, each different from the others, came up out of the sea. Now, I'm telling you right now, the four beasts are the head, chest, belly, and legs of Daniel chapter 2. How do I know that? Well, it's going to be obvious as we go through this. The first was like a lion. By the way, here is what it looks like, and the Ishtar Gate. The Ishtar Gate was this massive gate. The entrance to Babylon had lions all over it. If you go to the Pergamum Museum in Berlin, there's this wall, and it's just one big mural with lots and lots of lions. Because the bottom line, this is Babylon, and the lion was kind of like the eagle for America. They were going to make it the turkey, but they made it the eagle instead. That was a much better choice. All right. "And it had the wings of an eagle. I watched it until its wings were torn off, and it was lifted from the ground so that it stood on 2 feet like a human being, and the mind of a human was given it." Now, this is a reference to the fact that Nebuchadnezzar had a heart for Jehovah. All right? "And then before me was a second beast which looked like a bear. It was raised up on its sides. It had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told, 'Get up and eat your fill of flesh.'" All right, so it's kind of like the Flintstones, you know, one of those things. If you got to be, you know, the Flintstones, you have to be old. All right, but anyway. By the way, this is Persia. How many great empires were conquered by Cyrus? The answer is three. And that is Lydia, Babylon, and Egypt. So the three ribs in the mouth of the bear are the three kingdoms that Cyrus conquered. "After that I looked, and there before me was another beast, one that looked like a leopard." And which kingdom is this going to be? Greece. Correct. "And on its back it had four wings like those of a bird. The beast had four heads, and it was given authority to rule." Now, I can tell you what the four heads are, but I'm not going to do it, because when we get to Daniel chapter 8, we're going to come back to these four heads, and we're going to find out who these heads are. The bottom line is, this vision has to do with the fourth beast, the terrible beast. So let's read about that. "After that, in my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was a fourth beast, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. It had large iron teeth. It crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. It was different from all the former beasts, and it had 10 horns. While I was looking about, thinking about the horns, there before me was another horn, a little one, which came up among them. And three of the first horns were uprooted before it. This horn had eyes like the eyes of a human being and a mouth that spoke boastfully. Now, I'm assuming you've read this before. Did you wonder what this is about? Imagine Dan has to write, I got to write this down? You know, this beast with 10 horns, and there's a little horn, and the little horn saying, ha, 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 I'm better than all the other horns, and he knocks three others. I mean, what a weird vision. But I'm telling you, you can read a history book, and you can find out exactly what this is about, which is what we're going to do. So there's the terrible beast with your 10 horns. This is somebody's idea, with 10 horns, and this little the little prideful horn there. We'll find out who that is. All right? Now, luckily for us, Daniel was given an interpretation down in verse 15. I, Daniel, was troubled in spirit, and the visions that passed through my mind disturbed me. I approached one of those standing there and asked him the meaning of all this. So he told me, and he gave me the interpretation of these things. The four great beasts are four kings, or kingdoms. So in case there's any doubt, that's what they are, right? And that is Babylon, Persia, Mede, Greece, Rome. All right? The four great beasts are four kings that will rise from the earth. But the holy people of the Most High will receive the kingdom, possess it forever and ever, yes, forever and ever. Then I want to know the meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, the more terrifying, with its iron teeth and bronze claws. The beast that crushed and devoured its victims, trembled underfoot whatever was left. I also want to know about the 10 horns on its heads, about the other horn that came up, before which three of them fell, the horn that looked more imposing than the others, had eyes and a mouth that spoke boastfully. As I watched, this horn was waging war against the holy people and defeating them, until the Ancient of Days came and pronounced judgment on in favor of the holy people. He gave me this explanation. The fourth beast is a fourth kingdom that will appear on the earth. It'll be different from all the other kings that will devour the whole earth, trampling it down and crushing it. The 10 horns are 10 kings who will come from this kingdom. And then another king will arise different from the earlier ones. He will subdue three kings. He will speak against the Most High, oppress his holy people, try to change the set times and laws. The holy people are delivered into his hands for a time, times, and half a time. Now, did Rome have kings? The answer is, for almost 700 years, Rome had no kings. Rome was a republic, and it had a senate. The first king of Rome was Augustus Caesar. Now, according to this prophecy, the 11th emperor of Rome is going to attack the saints. He's going to speak boastfully. He's going to try to change the set times, and he's going to change the set laws. Now, who is the 11th emperor of Rome? His name is Domitian. Who was the first emperor of Rome who systematically attacked the church? His name was Domitian. Now, you've probably heard about Nero. And if you want to know a little bit about Nero, if you read in Revelation 17, it mentions 8 instead of 11. All right? And that's because Revelation 17 doesn't mention Galba, Otho, and Vitellius. Now, Nero did persecute the church. He had a bad day. He burned a bunch of Christians in Rome, and that's all he did. He did not oppress the church generally. Now, remember the whole thing with the burning of Rome, and he needed a scapegoat. But this was not a major persecution. Now, if you were the ones killed, they'd be kind of major to you. But basically, he had a temper tantrum. It lasted a week, and that was it. Other than that, he left the church alone. Domitian, on the other hand, made Christianity illegal. Now, Domitian was so prideful that his name became synonymous with arrogance. He demanded to be addressed as my Lord God Domitian. All right? His name was a byword for arrogance. In Rome, he said, that person is a Domitian. That meant an arrogant jerk. Now, Domitian was so prideful that he had the name October changed to Domitianus. And he had November changed to Germanicus, which was his surname. Imagine somebody so arrogant that they're going to change the name of a month to themselves while they're still alive. By the way, there is precedence for this example. The month of July is named after Julius Caesar. Did Julius Caesar name July after himself? No way. And by the way, the month of August is named after Augustus. But Augustus didn't do that. This guy was so arrogant, he had the names of 2 months changed during his lifetime. What did Daniel say 650 years before this happened? He said the 11th emperor of Rome will attack the saints and will try to change the set times, right? That's exactly what happened. It was the 11th emperor. It also said, it says here, he will subdue three kings. Now, this is awesome. What happened is, Nero died. Nero was the last of the line of the Julio-Claudian line. So there was no obvious successor. At the time, Vespasian was at Jerusalem fulfilling a prophecy in Daniel chapter 9. All right, he was the obvious successor because he was the most powerful emperor. So he rushed back to Rome, leaving Titus behind to complete Daniel chapter 9 fulfillment. We'll see that next Wednesday. In the meantime, three kings ruled. Now notice, 68 to 69, 69 to 70. These three guys ruled for like 3, 4, 5 months. You can read about this by reading this guy, Suetonius, who wrote the history of the Roman emperors of this time. Now, while Vespasian was surrounding Jerusalem and heading back to Rome, his son Domitian was in Rome. And guess what Domitian did? He helped to defeat Galba, Otho, and Vitellius. Now, how often in history has one king defeated three different kings that came before them? That's pretty unusual. So Daniel told us 650 years before it happened that there'd be an arrogant, prideful king who would be the 11th emperor of Rome, who would attack the saints, take out three other kings, and change the set times. Yeah, I see that look. It's like, wow, that's amazing. But, what else does it say? It will also change the laws. Now, Rome had the most famous legal system in all history. Even today, France basically is under Roman law. And almost all of Central and South America is under what's called Roman law. We have common law here. They have Roman law. This Domitian was such an arrogant jerk that he canceled the entire Roman law. And guess what he created? The Domitian law. So, according to Daniel, 650 years before it happened, when Rome was merely a tiny city-state on the Tiber River that nobody in the Near East ever heard of, he says the fourth kingdom is going to have kings, and the 11th king will take out three other kings, will be prideful, will change the set times, and change the set laws. Now, if the Bible's not inspired by God at this point, it's like, if you're not convinced by this, then could you be convinced by any evidence? Now, remember, those people who want to say that it can't be a prophecy because it was written after the events, that's after the events of Daniel chapter 8 that I haven't read yet. All right, but could anybody claim that Daniel was written after 97 A.D. when Domitian did, or 96 A.D. when Domitian did what he did? I mean, even those people won't say that. They know that that's not going to fly. All right, so this tells me two things. Number one, the Bible is inspired by God, and if you don't believe it, then you're just not paying attention. All right? And number two, it tells me that God rules the nations. Because who did all this stuff? Now, if you were being persecuted by Domitian and being thrown in jail, what would you be tempted to feel? That things are running out of control. Oh my goodness, why did I get myself into this? I mean, you know, surely you'd be tempted to feel that. But do you think the early Christians could read? Or if they could, well, all right. You think they were aware of what Daniel said? Do you think they could count to 11?
Yeah.
Do you think they could count to 3?
Yeah.
Do you think they didn't know what was going on here?
No.
That's pretty awesome. All right. Anyway, I'll just finish this out because it's pretty much time to finish up. All right, so let me read it again. The 10 horns are 10 kings. The first 10 kings. Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero, Galba, Vitellius, Vespasian, and Titus. All right? who will come from this kingdom. After them, another king will arise, different from the earlier ones. He will subdue three kings. He will speak against the Most High, oppress his holy people, try to change the set times and the laws. By the way, when the day Domitian died, they turned October back into October. They turned November back into November. They got rid of the Domitian law and reestablished the Roman law. Ha 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 to you, Mr. Domitian. By the way, I shouldn't say that. That's not a nice spirit there. But by the way, that statue is in the museum in Ephesus, and the head is like this tall.
Wow.
This guy was arrogant, to say the least. Oh, my goodness. But the court will sit, and his power will be taken away and completely destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty, power, and greatness of all the kingdoms of heaven will be handed over to the holy people of the Most High. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all rulers will worship and obey him. This is the end of the matter. I, Daniel, was deeply troubled by my thoughts, and my face turned pale, but I kept the matter to myself. See, God is telling us that his kingdom is going to be an everlasting kingdom. I believe it. All right? So anyway, next Wednesday we'll do Daniel 8 through 12. It's going to be pretty awesome. See you then. Have some great fellowship. Any quick questions, like maybe one or two questions, just really quick? Yeah. Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, and you're aware of the catacombs, right? And there's a lot of paintings by Christians, and one of the most common themes was the lions then in Daniel, absolutely. By the way, a lot of people think the catacombs were the Christians hiding from persecution. That's not true. It's where they were basically worshiping the saints. So what was going on in the catacombs was not totally a good thing because they probably shouldn't be worshiping the saints. But, yeah. Oh, well, go to France. See, the common law, I kind of like the common law because you have the thing called a jury and all that kind of stuff. And Mexico, now they're changing, the Mexicans, they're changing their system to a better jury system, stuff like that. Anyway, that's politics that has nothing to do with us, but I kind of like the common law better than the Roman law system. But, you know, I'm an American, so maybe I'm prejudiced. What I do know is, if for Christians in the first, second, and third century, I know that they read Daniel, and I know they believed that God was in control. All right, thank you. See you next Wednesday.
Thanks, John. Always great hearing all the wisdom that you have for us, that's for sure. I know I really love the